Hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Later on in the show, we have the privilege of having psychiatrist Dr. Carl Benzio here in the studio to talk about how not to be a pushover. So if you feel like you're a good listener, but that leads to manipulation, how do you have a healthy approach towards that? Then for our culture segment, we have Joel Malm here. He is the author of Vision Map and the founder of Summit Leaders to show us how to take a dream that you have and actually make it a reality. It could be a big dream, starting a business, a ministry, or it could be just paying off some debt or getting something done. Great principles for moving forward. And here we are for our roundtable. We're going to be talking here about people who have actually accomplished a dream, whether big or small. I feel like knowing what these are, they're kind of all kind of biggish, so I'm very impressed. But we have Ashley, Anthony, and Dave here in the studio. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey there.
Thanks for having us.
Very good to have you. And we're actually going to talk, I want to kind of hear your stories in light of this, because you all have accomplished different things, all of which are super cool. And I think this is very easy for people who are listening to say, oh, well, I'm just not that type of person that can accomplish big things, or I'm not a goal setter, or I just let life happen to me. But the fact is, we all have certain things that we want to do. So it could be cleaning out your garage, people. Okay, some of you need to get on task with that. But let's go ahead and start talking about that. So I want you guys to share each a little bit of your own story, what the dream is or the that thing that you have worked towards accomplishing. And really, in light of that, where did that idea come from? So, Ashley, why don't you kick it off?
Sure. Well, I was actually in the midst of a really big transition. I had gone from being single later in life and got married to a pastor, met online, so I moved across the country away from my family and suddenly found myself unemployed. So with all this transition, I needed something to ground myself, and I needed some kind of creative outlet, so I started writing. Mm. I had written just silly stories for friends before and wasn't really sure what to do with it, but I ended up with a whole novel and wasn't sure where to go. I figured I had put all the effort into doing something with it, so I needed to go beyond that. So I looked into getting it published, quickly learned that I knew very little about the craft of writing. So I learned a little bit after getting rejected from several publishers. And that just turned into this big dream of wanting to be a traditionally published author. I did put in a lot of work to get there, and it took a lot of perseverance. But now I have a couple of published novels under my belt, so
wow.
It's pretty
awesome.
Wow,
give us the genre. I think that's kind of
I write sci-fi with Christian elements. So if awesome. You like if you like Star Wars and you want some Christian wholesomeness to it, that's what I write.
That's pretty cool. So we'll have to read those, because, like, what in the world Christian sci-fi is? I can't even imagine that.
It's like Chewbacca, but with the cross hanging from his neck.
There you go.
Like that,
yeah.
Probably.
No.
That's probably awesome. Okay, Anthony, what about you? Because, hello, you have a day job, so what else are you doing?
Yeah, so I also have a business called Special Sauce. And when I was a kid, I got a book, I think probably from, those programs in school, the Scholastic Book Club. I was crazy about that. I've always been addicted to books. And so I got a book once called Kid Biz. And it was like, you know, here are all these little businesses you can start as a kid. And ever since then, I realized, like, I want to be an entrepreneur ultimately. Yeah, so for a long time, I spent most of my time thinking about, like, what I have to do before I can be an entrepreneur versus just actually starting something. So, yeah, now I finally kind of breached that gap and have a web design and marketing business.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
All right. My dream started in all places in McDonald's in 1988. And I kid you not, I was sitting there with some friends, and an old guy went running by the window and just out of my mouth without even thinking. I said, I'm going to run a marathon someday. And my buddies started laughing. And it was probably the best thing that happened, because if they would have encouraged me and said, Dave, oh, yeah, we could see you doing that, never would have done it. But I wanted to prove them wrong.
Uh-huh.
And so in 1988, I ran the Chicago Marathon, and wow. I've been doing it for 27 years. And then about 4 years ago, I thought, I think I need a new challenge, and started jumping into these ultra marathons, and attempted the Leadville race August 16th, and it took a long time to finish. I walked most of it.
Wow. So, like, when you reference the Leadville race we're talking about, because I have been there when they've done this race, it is 100 miles, right, at 11,000 feet here in Colorado.
Yeah.
Which most people can't even breathe sitting at 11,000 feet. So that's crazy. I've seen, in fact, I saw the second place finisher come in once, and I was telling Dave, he looked skeletal. He had someone running next to him because they thought he was going to pass out. Basically, he had a headlamp on. It was right. Nighttime. Totally crazy. I'm going to do it next year.
All right, good.
I think it's natural for great athletic dreams to begin at McDonald's.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
It's perfect sense.
I
mean,
my cholesterol was at 350. They sponsored him and gave him food, you know, just to fuel up all that with their healthy options. That's pretty cool. So how, okay, just piggybacking on that, how did you, were you running already in 1988? How did you go within a year to be running a marathon?
The funny thing is I knew nothing about it. I had regular tennis shoes on, and I remember my feet would kill me. And then someone said, you know, Dave, there's something called running shoes. Oh. and I actually got a pair, and it was like running on trampolines. I remember thinking, this is like cheating.
Wow.
And that sort of thing. But I just started doing a lot of reading and just kind of learning the sport. And I remember in college, I was talking to one of the cross-country runners at college, and he said, Dave, I heard you're doing a marathon in October. I said, yeah, and I was kind of pretty proud of myself. He said, what's your longest run at this point? I said, 8 miles. And he said, you're toast. I don't even see you finishing. But because I was in my 20s, you can get away with some stuff.
Wow.
You can't now.
Yeah, okay. All right, so let's all talk. I want you guys to talk about opportunity. Like, how did you take advantage of opportunities that you had? I mean, this, a lot of it, how much of it is just doing that next thing and how much of it is actually planning and charting out, like, where you're going to go? I mean, because a lot of people are intimidated by, you know, 5-year plans and all this kind of stuff, or like looking at saying, okay, I'm going to get this out to 3 publishers in the next 5 months and I'm going to do, you know, or whatever. Because these are all kind of big ventures that I don't think just happen under most circumstances. So what was planning and what was looking for that next open door or opportunity?
I think it's about half and half. Mm-hmm. For me, definitely there was some planning involved. But on the other hand, I had a contest that I entered. Mm-hmm. And that actually led to my first published book. And that was the opportunity that I just couldn't pass up. Mm-hmm. I won the contest and ended up getting published, which was awesome. Mm. So, yeah, that I would say half and half for me.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. I think it's really important to be ready to say yes to things that you don't feel like you're ready for. Lisa, you've talked about mm-hmm. that kind of thing a lot. Like, the opportunity part is, you know, something comes up and instead of saying like, I'm not prepared for that or I have no idea how to do that, just saying yes, kind of jumping in head first and then figuring it out as you go along. It's the whole shoot and aim philosophy that I love. So for me personally, I mean, put that in the right context, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. But for me personally, it was a mixture of both as well. My main opportunity was that I didn't have a job. And so I was, struggling with that. And I was actually teaching myself the basics of web design and marketing only because I was working on other business concepts that I still plan to launch eventually. And basically, while teaching myself those skills just so I could kind of start my own web presence, I realized, oh, this is actually fun. I'm good at it. I should learn more and find someone that will pay me to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, the opportunity was, if you have the money to pay for an entry fee, mm-hmm. they'll take your money. Mm-hmm. They don't care who you are, mm-hmm. what your background is. Mm-hmm. And then as far as getting ready for it, it's just probably the consistency, mm-hmm. making sure that you're getting out there 5 or 6 times a week and just getting ready for it.
Yeah.
And you can plan all you want to, but sometimes God will change your direction.
Mm. Yeah.
And he'll take you a totally different way than you ever thought possible.
Yeah.
And do even better than you had hoped.
Yeah. Now, is this something that you guys, you know, every aspect of what you're doing, I mean, it's maybe a little bit broad brush to say every aspect, but that you genuinely enjoy, like you really feel like these pursuits are life-giving to you? Or is it kind of like, is there a little aspect of the monkey on your back where you're like, I have this goal, I kind of need to do this, I kind of, you know, where there's the frustration elements too?
Oh, there are days, definitely. Mm-hmm. But this is my passion, mm-hmm. and this is where I have found life, definitely. Mm-hmm. To me, it's a ministry, mm-hmm. because I do write a genre that is not normally out there, But I loved science fiction. I grew up on it. I had two brothers who loved it and got me into it. And so going out to the bookshelves, I would see books that just didn't have very good content. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted something that I felt good about and that I could share with others. Mm-hmm. And so that's where it came from. So that's my passion.
Cool.
Yeah, I would say that I still absolutely love to run. And, you know, it's not even for the exercise of it. It's just it's getting out in God's creation. And if I had to choose between worshiping God at church, which I love, or being out in his creation, for me personally, that's where I draw closest to him. So mm-hmm. I just love being out, you know, sometimes 10,000, 11,000 feet up and just taking it all in.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
I'm serious.
I've talked about that with others too. We have, you know, Brandon, who's been on the show quite a bit, says that same thing, that it's so stress relieving for him. And I'm like, you know what's stress relieving? Having done it and being sitting at home with a bowl of ice cream after you came back from a run.
I would think about running, except that whenever I drive by runners, their facial expressions never made me think I want to feel the way they feel.
You guys are a different breed. Eric Little smiled when he ran. He felt God's pleasure. He was probably the only one.
An angel or something. This stuff is very life-giving for me. I definitely get tired because, of course, I have this job as well as my business, and I'm totally maxed out at this point. It's sustainable, thankfully, and I'm sort of learning the whole time management and taking care of my family and social life and job and business. So I've had to say no to lots of things. But yes, overall, it is very life-giving. Like with marketing, I can't even drive by a billboard or watch a commercial or get like some promotional email without examining like every tiny bit of it and thinking about how it might be better or why it's so great or why it's terrible and things. So I'm always thinking that way anyways. So it's a natural fit.
Do you guys find that it's been a great way to build relationships with other people in those industries or interest groups or whatever?
Definitely. Yeah. I've got a group here in town that I'm part of, but it's also through work I've been able to meet a whole lot of other authors, mm-hmm. A lot of nonfiction authors, but you know, and it's definitely a support system.
Yeah.
And it's,
well, you're actually
it's
like
awesome.
Leading a class here, right?
That's right.
For people
that are
aspiring novelists. Yes. So nice. We can all sit at her feet and be like, Ashley, please tell me how to do this.
I don't know about that.
That's cool. Okay, talk to me a little bit about fears. Any point in the process where you felt, I'm not good enough, I can't do this, I can't bring it to completion, I'm comparing my work to what I've seen from others and it doesn't measure up, I can't get the same time that other people can in these races, am I really a runner, am I just, you know, or even like, you know, Leadville 100. I mean, does anyone actually run that whole thing, Dave?
The guy that won it probably ran a good chunk of it. But there's a pass called Hope Pass that is over 12,000 feet. And even himself, he was walking that
thing. Maybe had to just trot. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, talk about fears of what that looked like, where you just felt like maybe I'm at a roadblock here.
Oh, that's always there.
Oh.
in what I do with the writing, there's always rejection. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they say you have to have a tough skin and just get over it. There's always comparison because we hop on Amazon and check our book numbers and check, you know, the hits on our website. So it's always there. But that's when you have to listen to that still small voice inside and trust in God and just let those kinds of things go.
Hmm. Yeah. I think that if you want to learn what the term existential crisis means, then you should try to start something and ship something.
Hey, how do you spell that?
So, yeah, the challenge of saying I'm going to do something and then like make anything and then ship it and put it out there in front of people, that is a crisis. I think for most people, I've never heard of anyone actually that's just like, yeah, whatever. Especially like, you know, launching a business or creating a work of art, it's like, it's up to you. There's no one that will make you do this. There's no one that can do it for you, really. It's you doing something. And so, yeah, it always calls into question whether you're qualified, whether you've taken on too much, why did you commit to saying yes, and so on. And my first customer, whenever, you know, they asked me, like, hey, will you build this website for us? And I said, sure. Like the first day that I went and sat down to start doing it, I was like, oh, crap. Like, why did I say yes to that? And I freaked out for like a day and went home. And my wife was like, you've been doing this for a long time for yourself. You've been studying it and working on this. So why are you freaking out? Just go do it. And I was like, oh, you're right. And so, while it is an existential crisis in that, like, the responsibility is on you for whatever you're making and shipping, it's also, you know, going back to the relationship thing, beautiful to have a support in your life. And, so ultimately, you know, God helps you, your people help you. And, there's always a fear, aspect to overcome with anything that you're shipping.
Mm-hmm. And the rewards definitely outweigh that mm-hmm. fear. Mm-hmm. I had someone come to me and tell me that I actually helped him through one of my scenes that I had written with his anger. Mm-hmm. And that just, that made it all worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Mm-hmm.
With this Leadville race, you know, you spend a lot of time, a lot of months preparing for it, and you kind of go into it. You got to be a little bit confident. And my goal was not to complain one time. Wow. Well, I ended up being on my feet for 28 hours, and the guy that ran the second half of the race with me, at one of the aid stations, I could hear my wife having a conversation with him. How's Dave doing? And he said, not great. and it dawned on me. I thought, I don't think I'm going to finish this thing. But at mile 87, I looked at my wife and I said, I'm dying. Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, whatever. Get your food and get out of here. Because they say, beware of the chair. The longer you sit, you're probably not getting up.
Okay. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So how has taking on something like this, taking on a dream and actually accomplishing a dream, helped you in other areas of your life, as far as, you know, having the confidence to move forward in something, recognizing that you can do something, the ability to just say that you've done something? I mean, I think a lot of people have unfinished dreams or have things that they say, you know, someday I'm going to do this someday. And I know I did that with my writing my book. I was like, either I'm going to write this or I need to let it go, because otherwise mm-hmm. it is going to haunt me and freak me out. And so it was just a decision, you know, point. But how has that helped you guys other areas of your life?
It's given me more confidence. And something that I have learned is at some point you can keep trying to do something, mm-hmm. but at some point you have to graduate and you have to go on and actually accomplish something. Mm-hmm. Again, with the writing of the books, I see a lot of people who they go ahead and they get their manuscript and they refine it and they revise it and they go over it with critique groups and they just keep working on it. You got to get it out there. Mm-hmm. You just have to do it. Mm-hmm. With teaching the class here at Focus, that was something I never, ever thought I would do. Hmm. But I have learned so much. At some point, I have to pass that on. Mm-hmm. And so it's made me grow and learn more skills and do more things.
Cool.
I would say, you know, we've all heard that term, dig deep. Mm-hmm. And to me, it was just another one of those cliches. Mm-hmm. And but now, I mean, I learned to just really tap into something that I never knew I had before. And so there's times now when it's not, let's say, about running, but something else where you got to dig deep. I know that just keep pressing on and eventually mm-hmm. you'll see it through. And I wish I could be more articulate, but I guess I've learned that in a deeper way.
Yeah.
I've learned the value of time, and they say, you know, if you want something done, find someone busy. And I think I'm becoming more of that busy person, like not in the negative sense of the word, like I'm just always rushing around and freaking out, but in that we all waste tons of time, and it's such a valuable resource. And so now that I have less of it with these different responsibilities, I'm actually using all of it so much better, mm-hmm. Even down to small things like typically I would just read every book I could get my hands on. Now I read fewer books and I have to really pick, like, which ones matter? Why am I reading this? Or like, I watch far fewer movies or shows. And then, so surprisingly, even though I've shrunken my amount of available time, even on top of the business and job and family and, you know, whatever else, I actually get more done in general. Like, mm-hmm. I feel way more empowered to like take this resource of time and make good things with it. So,
awesome. Well, folks out there, jump over to our blog at boundless.org and weigh in with what you are doing, the big dream, whether you want to accomplish it, whether you have accomplished it, or you're in process. We want to hear from you too. So thanks, you guys, for weighing in.
Thank you very much.
Come home, child. Wind blown by trial. Rest your head for a while.
Well, hey, folks, it's always fun when we get to sit down with people out and about who have done or are doing cool things. And, of course, they're, you know, just getting into those stories can be very inspiring for us as listeners, or just flat out discouraging. Who knows? I mean, if you look at people and you're just like, wow, why are they so amazing and I'm just lame? But hopefully we'll be able to turn that around for you with today's guest for the culture segment, Joelle Malm. Hey, how are you doing?
Good. I'm doing great.
Well, very fun. For those of you who don't know, we actually, your book, Joelle, was recommended to us by one of our listeners. His book is Vision Map, charting a step-by-step course for your biggest hopes and dreams. So there are people out there in our audience who know who you are and perhaps want to do one of your expeditions. I don't know.
I'd love to have them come along.
I know. That'd be fun. So you were actually, okay, so I'm just flat out going to ask you, how old are you? You're within our audience, I think.
Well, I'm 36, yeah.
36. That's young enough. Okay, cool. All so 20. You're not 19. You're not, you know, whatever. That's cool.
No, no, I'm not 19. The events in the book happen in my 20s, though.
Okay, okay. So. Very cool. So you have a few years under your belt actually doing, like, the, you know, the fruit of this plan. So that's good. It actually
exactly.
has sustainability. And we're going to actually talk about that, what it means to vision map a big dream that you have, specifically what Joelle calls a God idea. And any of you who have ever done, whether Catalyst or the Willow Creek Leadership Summit, you know that people, influencers out there like Bill Hybels and others talk about that, what it means to take something that God has put in your heart and actually bring it to fruition. So, and I want to kick off, Joelle, by just saying that one of the cool things you start the book off with is talking about how this is not a book about outliers. They exist, the people that just somehow stumble into some kind of amazingness and are doing crazy things. This is a book for normal people. I think
right.
you describe it as how normal people got to where they are today. So that is very encouraging.
Right.
Because you can,
exactly.
you're a normal person. Right.
I like to think of myself as fairly normal. Yes.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit. Let's dive into your story a little bit because you start, you know, you really tell your story throughout this book and use it as the illustration for how to actually vision map something. You talk a little bit about where you were in your 20s, what you were up to, and how you got this idea. And I want you to tell in the process how this idea actually became something that you entertained as something legitimate that you could possibly do.
Okay. Well, as I say in the book, it all started on a mountain in Russia in a blizzard at 16,000 feet. And what had happened is a friend of mine, my college pastor, actually, it was my junior year of college. He had said he was going to climb the highest peak in Europe, which is actually in Russia, Mount Elbrus. And I went with him. And about 4 days in, I discovered I was in way over my head. This wasn't just a hike. This was like a serious climb. And I kind of realized that. And at one point, that final day when we were about to summit, this blizzard blew in. And I kind of looked around and I realized, this is incredibly dangerous. And I've got a lot to live for here. So I turned to my guide and I said, hey, look, I'm out. This is out of my range here. And so we turned around and went back to camp, and the only problem was the trail had been snowed over. So I was, you know, she said, well, stop, wait here, I'm going to go find the trail. So I sat there in the snow, and I'll never forget, in the snow, I'm sitting there just kind of evaluating this experience and thinking about just how powerful it was. And even though I had just turned around from trying to conquer this mountain, it was the whole experience of traveling and getting out of my comfort zone and all these changes in different places made me realize that I really love doing this. And I felt like God spoke something to me. It wasn't like this voice from heaven or anything, but I felt like, hey, do this for people. Help them get out of their comfort zone and see what's best for them. And we've come since to kind of latch on to one of my friend Mark Batterson's phrases, which is change of pace plus change of place equals change of perspective. And it was literally like kind of one of these moments of transcendence where God placed that in my heart. And I just saw a need for people to really get an experience like this. And so I stepped out and got home, started telling a lot of people about it. And the funny thing was, I had no experience with any of this. I didn't, you know, I've never started anything. In fact, my one mountain climbing experience here had just ended in failure, essentially. We had never gotten to the top of the mountain. But I knew it was something God had put in me. And so I started kind of navigating and trying to figure out, what do I do next? And that's kind of the process I laid out in the book. I just tell the story of the process God walked me through, and then the tool that he kind of showed me in the process of how to take a big mountain, God-sized idea that's literally impossible for you to do on your own, but begin stepping forward in faith, believing that God put it there, and ultimately it's going to be him that brings it to pass. You know, I say in the book, and I totally believe this, God could do anything he wants without any of us, but for whatever reason, he chooses to use people like us who fumble the ball and we're frail and we're weak, mm-hmm. but he gets the most glory when he does amazing things through people who really have no ability to do it on their own. And that's what he's all about, obviously, getting the glory. And when we give him the glory, that's when our life is in the right place. He gets the glory, and a natural outflow of that is we get the joy of walking in that. So
yeah,
that's how it started.
Well, and that's cool. And I'd like to point out, you know, because people are probably like, well, of course you're going to get this idea because it's not like you had anything else going on. But you did. I mean, you were actually planning to go to law school. You were working, I think, at Southwest Airlines at some point here.
I had a great job at Southwest Airlines. Phenomenal job. I've been working there for 7 years at that point.
Well, yeah. I should say, this is just a caveat, that I really need them to start giving me free flights because I was born on June 18th, 1971 when they did their first flight. So it's like we are twins.
Oh my gosh.
We're twins. I mean, shouldn't I be on their PR roll somehow? I feel like I need to say that. Okay. Anywho, that is just
you
a side note.
For that.
I know. Who do I need to talk to? I love them. I am totally on the plan with them. Anywho, so let's talk about you basically taking. I also want to make this attainable for our folks. I like the way that you say you just went out, got a piece of poster board, and you said the first thing you had to do is come up with your one liner, your elevator speech, basically for elevator line for
what
actually was. So you could start explaining it to people and tell us what that was and how you had to kind of practice, telling that to people.
Yeah. So I realized early on I actually got to sit down with somebody, a pretty well-known leader in the Christian community. I started telling him what I was trying to do, and I spent 20 minutes explaining it, and I thought, man, it's so clear. And then he immediately said, you know, so what exactly are you doing? And I remember being so frustrated because I thought it was so clear,
mm-hmm.
but I've found since then that when I work with people who've got a dream, God puts something in their heart, they see a need, it's not always as clear as we think it is when we're sharing it. So anyways, that's one of the things I realized early on is I've got to really figure out what exactly am I trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what so that's the point, the importance of a one-liner. And we compare it in writing to like an elevator pitch. If you found yourself in an elevator with a guy who could fund your dream or make your dream come true, would you be able to explain in the ride from the first to the 10th floor what exactly is going on?
Yeah. So tell us
to the point that you get them hooked.
Tell us what yours was / is.
Well, it will always be taking people on outdoor adventures with a spiritual focus.
Okay. Yeah, see, that makes a lot more sense than the 20-minute description of whatever you were talking about.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, you know, you've got the outdoor adventure element, spiritual focus. People are like, oh, I can latch on to that. And then you can explain your whole big vision for it,
mm-hmm.
but you got to get people hooked at first.
Yeah. So here's a question that I have, because there's a difference between people who have something that God placed on their heart and they actually believe they're going to meet a need and they understand that there's possibly a process by which they could get there versus the people who are just like, I hate my current job and I need to do something different and I'm going to come up with something crazy. How do you differentiate if you actually have what you're calling a God idea versus you don't really have a vision, and quite frankly, you don't even know if you have what it takes to do this?
Well, I mean, a God idea is first off going to be something that you can't accomplish on your own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you could do it on your own, you wouldn't need God, and I think that's why he likes to put impossible challenges in front of us, just to remind us, hey, you need me in this. But in terms of people with a career, you know, I find there's a lot of people that we have a dream or hope in us, but we're working in a job that we're just trying to make ends meet. And it's sometimes you don't even have time you look at it and you say, I don't even have time to realistically, you know, start to pursue this. But I would say that, well, first of all, I would say that God's will is very wide. I think a lot of people think there's one thing we're all called to do. And I think there is one message we're all called to share. But I think that can be shared in many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a problem that we're all equipped to solve, but that can be done in many different ways. I've I've found that outdoor works for me. There's lots of other ways to do these things, though, too. So in terms of finding and talking to someone who's got a maybe in a job that they hate, I would say, you know, first, you got to figure out who you are. Mm-hmm. What strengths has God given you? Because a lot of times what you do is going to flow out of who you are. And that's what I told people all the time. They're like, how did you end up doing this? And I always say, well, I figured out I had a really weird skill set. And then I asked God how I can use it to glorify him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times we get stuck in a box of here's the things I can do. Or I want to be in ministry, so I must have to work at a church.
Yeah.
I want to be in this, so I have to. But there, I feel like God's will is really wide on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in fact, David says, you brought me to a wide place. There's so many options and stuff like for things like that.
Yeah.
For jobs and things we can do. So.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let's talk about the next piece in your story, because I think this is helpful, too. And that is, I think there are a lot of people out there that assume that, okay, if this is meant to be, it's going to be just super easy and the waters are going to part and everything's going to fall into place. And you actually had to take some big risks. Talk to us a little bit. That example, I liked your example of the big ask and just the idea that you really do, if it's a God idea, have to trust God to be speaking to other people on your behalf who may be able to open some doors for you and or just flat out step in and help you accomplish your dream. What's the value in that, in really bringing others into this and starting to just boldly ask people for help?
Well, I grew up on the mission field in Guatemala in Central America, and I saw a lot of missionaries that gave this line. They said, well, we just know that God knows our need, and he's going to speak to people, and then they'll provide for our need because he's going to speak to them. Mm-hmm. And I looked at that, and I said, man, I don't know if I agree with that philosophy. And the crazy thing is, a lot of people that had that philosophy were just scraping by and barely had enough resources to provide for themselves, much less anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of shaped my mindset, because I realized, you know, if God really put this dream in you, if it's really something he wants to see happen on this planet to bring him glory, then why would you not share that with people and give them a chance to get involved?
Mm-hmm.
So unless you hear, like, really clearly from God, don't ask, I'll do it for you. I think a lot of times we use that as an excuse to kind of to get away from something we don't really want to do, because, man, asking for help is very humbling.
Mm-hmm.
Acknowledging, I can't do this on my own. We all like to think we can pull ourselves, you know, the self-made man or woman, pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and did it on our own. But the reality is that if you're going to do something big that God's put on your heart, you might start out alone doing mm-hmm. it. The visionaries are usually a lonely road at the start, but you've got to bring people on, and you've got to be willing to ask people for help. Be willing to say, look, I really believe this is something God wants to do, and how can we bring your unique gifts into this? And that's the cool thing about it. When you do that, I've seen over and over again, sometimes your dream coming true makes another person's dream come true as they're serving in partnership with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. I've heard people say before that by not asking for help or by not letting someone step in, you are potentially denying them the opportunity to be a blessing and do something that God might be telling them to do, you know?
Exactly.
I think that's
exactly
helpful. Okay, so actually, like, how that played out in your life, I think it was it your dad or your grandpa who had a lawyer friend, and he basically was like, just ask him to help you and do it for free?
Yeah, that was. It's funny because I'd been praying for this thing, and then when it showed up, I got scared, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We went and visited my grandpa, and he was drawing up some papers for some sort of deal he was doing, and all of a sudden when this lawyer walks out, I'm like, oh my gosh, I know this guy, and all of a sudden my mind starts clicking. But of course I'm thinking, I don't want to manipulate, I don't want to, mm-hmm. you know, how do I keep this from being a manipulative situation? So, but the Lord opened the door when he's like, hey, what have you been up to lately? And the cool thing was, I had my one-liner down, my mm-hmm. one-line vision statement, so I told him, here's what I want to do, and he got it.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately I said, you know, I've actually been looking for help, and he stepped in and helped us get this 501c3, the not-for-profit paperwork going,
mm-hmm.
and did all the legal work for free, which was amazing to me because I was a poor college student, so
yeah.
I needed that.
Yeah. Talk to us, Joel, about the principle of, you know, once you start doing these asks, you start moving ahead, you get some traction. I liked what you had to say about, which I think is also quoting someone, possibly your grandpa, the idea of start small and grow slow. Which really should be grow slowly,
yeah.
But we're not going to split hairs here. But I just have an English.
You know, we debated whether to go grow slow or grow slowly, but yes.
That's okay. That's good. Talk about that principle practically. What does that actually mean? Because I think that helps this kind of dream be more attainable to people.
Yeah, so I see this over and over again. I work with people, helping them go after their dreams. And I think the challenge is we read these books that are like, go big or go home. And the reality is, in fact, I heard Mark Cuban say this the other day. He said, listen, you should never start a small business on a loan. And I thought, man, that fits right in line with the start small principle. A lot of times we dive in too deep and we get in over our head, and then we don't have the chance to really learn from our mistakes. Our mistakes can level us when we're in too deep. Mm-hmm. Because you take out a huge loan, you can't afford to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you start small, you make a little mistake here, you can adjust and you can fix things for when you're big, get ready to grow big. And I've seen it over and over again. This was a situation with me. I started seeing the potential for it. And everybody's like, you need to create a scalable model. And you need to figure out how you're going to replicate and franchise. And I start, and this is before I even had my first trip, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm start freaking out thinking, oh my gosh, how are we going to reproduce ourselves? And my daddy just, he said, hey, you haven't even done your first trip. Why don't you just do your first trip? And I remembered saying to him specifically, I said, Dad, what if only three people come on the first trip? And he's like, well, then it's you and three people, mm-hmm. but you're still going to do it. Mm-hmm. And I realized, oh yeah. And I started looking at it from that angle. You know what? We're just going to do this with whatever we have in front of us. A few years later, I used that to start a cafe in Peru. And it literally, I realized the power of that, because you've just got to start with what's in front of you and mm-hmm. let God build it. And then the great thing is when you make a mistake, it's not a mistake that's going to level you because you're going to miss a payment through a loan or whatever it is. Just start small with what you've got and build slowly. And when I've seen businesses that start that way, man, they grow more slowly, but man, they're digging roots down deep, and mm-hmm. they're getting stronger as they figure it out from the small to the big.
Yeah. Well, and in light of that, you actually talk about the danger. I think the principle I wrote down here was the danger of wanting perfection and planning too much. And we can get so up in the future and what's this going to look like in 10 years? And do I, you know, need to take out $250K to make it into this, you know, we think we're going to start the next Starbucks, you know, and like you said, have all these franchises and stuff. And I like you shared the illustration of the friend, the girl who's like, I like to sew. I'm going to make two shirts and see if a couple of stores will just try to sell these individual shirts. Because that's what she could do in her free time, you know.
And she just sold her first line to a group of boutiques in Texas here. So it's happening for her. Since I wrote that book, of course, we wrote that several months ago, but it's happening for her now. She showed what she's got, and they're like, yeah, we want it.
Yeah. That's
but
cool.
The cool thing is she didn't have to sink, you know, $200,000 into it. She just started small in her garage, which, yeah, it'd be nice to have a really nice place to start from, but you got to start in your garage. A lot of great things have started in garages.
Yeah. Well, okay, and then as we wrap up here, I want you to talk a little bit about bringing others into your dream. I mean, because you talked about doing expeditions, which you knew how to do. You've been all over the world. You speak three languages. But that spiritual element, you invited some other people in, and you flat out, we have interviewed him on the show, just contacted Mark Batterson, didn't even know who he was, had read one of his books, and basically said, hey, so I do these like trips and wondering if you want to come along and maybe, you know, pour in some teaching or whatever. And didn't you say it was just a few hours later you get an email like, I'm totally down with that. Tell me more.
Yeah, that was one of those moments where it's like this big moment of faith, but then you actually don't think it's going to happen. I woke up at 4 a.m. after reading his book, and you know, I'd been sitting on this idea for 3 or 4 years. Actually, we kind of restarted the idea and it failed. I talk about this divine failure where I really believe it was God that just wanted to show me that he was the one ultimately in charge. And then I felt like I wanted to reboot the organization in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
But I waited, you know, and it took me 2-3 years of waiting. And finally that moment came where I woke up at 4 a.m, felt like the Lord said, contact this guy, Mark Batterson. I read his book. I was like, well, I don't even know who he is. So I literally got online and I guessed at his email address. And I had gotten enough rejection notices to figure, you know, if it works its way through the pipeline at some point, it'll come back to me. We've prayerfully considered your request,
mm-hmm.
blah, blah, blah. But no.
Mm-hmm.
So, I knew the routine. Well, I wrote it like 4 a.m, went back to bed, woke up about 3 hours later, got a brief email from him and said, I love this idea. And 2 weeks later, I was sitting there with him across from him at his coffee shop. And man, the guy, he said, I want to be a shareholder in this ministry.
Hmm.
And really, he's kind of the one that launched us forward. He took a risk, let me take him on the Inca Trail. And we've done several adventures since then together. We're rafting the Grand Canyon next year with him. But he really opened the door for us, I think, to, first of all, to legitimize us, but also to give me a chance to, he took a risk because I had never done anything like this, per se. It was a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But he took the risk and came on board, and, man, what a blessing it's been because he opened a lot of doors for us.
Yeah. Well, and long story short, since then, you have worked with Bob Goff. You've worked with Margaret Feinberg. I mean, you have taken, others have caught this vision as well.
Yeah.
So it's just, I mean, it's cool to see. And folks, if any of you out there, I also want to say this isn't about like starting ministries or whatever. This can be applied to, I mean, it is about that, but it can also be applied. Joel applies it to paying off debt, finishing college, figuring out, you know, a bunch of life things. If you've ever wanted to write a book, just the process of this, I think, is so helpful. And so, Joel, I mean, there's so much more we could talk about. Again, folks, the book is Vision Map, Charting a Step-by-Step Course for Your Biggest Hopes and Dreams. Thank you so much for sharing from your own story. And just, again, in fact, I'm not even sure we said this, what we've been talking about is now called Summit Leaders. Joel is the founder of that, takes people on outdoor expeditions around the world, and just has a lot going on and continuing to build that and trust God in the midst of it. So awesome perspective.
One more resource that you might find helpful. We did a 7-part video series. Moody helped me do this. Moody Press, 7-part video series for people who want to start something. And we go through the first 7 steps of starting anything, whether it's to write a book, pay off debt. And the video series is available at helpmestartsomething.com.
Awesome.
And if you go to helpmestartsomething.com, you can watch these free 7 videos. We want to make them free. And it's really good stuff. There's action steps where you immediately start moving towards what you're dreaming about and put it into play, put it into motion.
Very cool. And of course, Joel can be heard from, found at summitleaders.org as well. That's where all of that goes down with the stuff that he's planned. So thank you so much for chatting with us here at The Boundless Show.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
You're set apart at such a high, clothed in radiant light. Angels sing before your throne to make your glory known.
Folks, here we are for the inbox segment of the show, which we love doing, and it's one of our most popular segments. And we have a new expert available to us today. His name is Carl Benzio, and he is a member of our Physicians Resource Council, which is a group of medical professionals who help us here at Focus on the Family chart everything from policy to expertise to guidelines for our counseling department. And so they are out there in the world doing their jobs and then pouring into us to give us great direction. So, Carl, welcome.
Hey, thanks.
Great to have you here. All right. I'm going to go ahead and read the question and let you weigh in. And, Carl, go ahead and give us your credentials, your type, your background, and where you are today.
Yeah, I'm a biomedical engineer is what my undergraduate major was. And then I always wanted to be a psychiatrist. So I went to medical school, got my medical degree at New Jersey Medical School in Newark, New Jersey, and then went to UC Irvine to do my psychiatric residency. And I've been practicing as a psychiatrist ever since. God's allowed me to do a lot of neat and interesting ministry kind of things around the world, and happy to be here to help you today.
Very cool. All right. And so he is a shrink. I'm not on the couch. If I don't like his answer, I'm just going to have him write me a prescription. Okay. So here we go, Carl. I love people and I enjoy listening to them, but for some reason they often manipulate me. It seems that I don't recognize this until it's too late and they've used me or hurt me. What am I doing wrong? How do I learn to love, care for, and support people without being a pushover?
Yeah, common question and situation that people get involved into, and especially women. But first off, you know, it's just wonderful that the person has a loving and generous heart. So that's, you know, if we had to err, we'd rather err on the side of being too compassionate mm-hmm. rather than being too stiff and cold and not compassionate at all. So that's wonderful, and I want to applaud that first. But as we get into it, I think the first thing that comes to my mind is, well, what is love? And I think sometimes, especially as Christians, we have this idea that love is always turning the other cheek and being a people pleaser. But, you know, there's a lot of times where Jesus didn't turn the other cheek, and he was quite confrontive in situations. I think we have the idea that love means always saying yes. And certainly when you think of it as a parent, you know, saying no oftentimes is the most loving thing that you can do. So when we're confronted with these kind of situations and somebody's sort of pushing our emotional buttons and we have that yearning to want to say yes to them, to be loving and compassionate, oftentimes no is actually the best answer and the most loving answer in this situation. People pleasing is a huge issue. You know, we have a hard time whenever an adult makes a request of us. It seems like when a child makes a request, we sort of know it might be irrational or inappropriate, so it's easy for us to say no to them. But whenever a fellow adult makes a request of us, we think that they probably thought it through, that they're a nice person, they have our best interests at heart. So saying yes to them, since I don't know very much about the situation, is probably the most loving and the best response. But that people-pleasing part of us just isn't good a lot mm-hmm. of times. We really want to be God-pleasers, not people-pleasers, and understanding what God's will is in the situation. You know, we have this thing called passive aggressive mm-hmm. behavior. And I think people really struggle sometimes with the idea of being too passive and only really looking out for the other person's needs, or being too aggressive and only looking out for their own needs. Assertive is being able to look out for both my needs and their needs, and to be able to find some common ground in those. And so for this kind of situation, well, what is that common ground with what their needs are that they're expressing to you? But here's what my needs are too. Mm-hmm. And how do we find a compromise that works? In order to do that, you really have to be self-reflective and understand who you are inside and what are some of those reasons why you're giving in or being manipulated or being maybe too naive or too trusting in the situation, whether it's to get their attention, to get their love, to get their approval. You need to be connected. You want somebody to like you. You want to be important in somebody's life. Those are all nice things in general, but if that's the only thing that's motivating you and interferes with your ability to see accurately the situation, you're going to get taken advantage of, and it's not good for you or the other person when that situation occurs. Lastly, I would say that trust is an important aspect, and trust doesn't go from 0 to 100 in one meeting. So how do we start with 0% trust? And then as the person shows that they're trustworthy by their actions and things, that we're able to then move from 0 to 10, 10 to 20, 20 to 30. It sounds like in this situation, she probably jumped from 0 to 80 mm-hmm. pretty quickly and then got taken advantage of.
Okay. Well, great thoughts. I think what you said is great. What does it look like to be a God pleaser so that we can determine what the right response is and then to work that out conversationally in love, I think is a great, great bit of guidance. So thank you so much, Carl, for weighing in on this.
All right. Well, thank you.
Okay, folks, that is it for this week's show. As always, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can answer your question in the future. And do plan on sharing the show with your friends. We like to hit current issues here, the stuff that we're all wrestling with, the stuff that we're all struggling with. And so we want you to be part of our community in the process. That's it for this week. We'll see you around next week. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.